that farmer that goes after your landlord. That's the first thing that popped my mind. And I know that's the first thing that popped in our listeners' mind is they went to church. You mentioned you name dropped one of your landlords that you enjoy working with. And all of a sudden they got a phone call from the guy that you just trusted with that information. So I agree, Dave, that farmer who always attacks people's landlords to try and bid up that cash rent. They are humble and hungry, but they're not smart.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
And welcome back to another Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker.
Thank you for joining us again. We really appreciate you spending your valuable time with us. We want to explain again, we have our Farm for Profit episodes and our Farm for Fun shows. This is the beginning of a profit show where we're going to have a What's Working in Ag segment and a general topic to help your farm achieve higher levels of profitability. You catch that next episode in the queue or catch us next week, and we're going to have a fun show where we pick somebody out of the ag sector, enjoy a couple of beers or drinks, and have a great time.
And thanks again to everybody for suggesting topics for us to talk about on the podcast. Keep them coming. Send any of those to farm, the number 4, profit, LLC at gmail.com. Again, farm, the number 4, profit, LLC at gmail.com. Check us out on social media as well.
We are very thankful to have Gearinghoff as a partner, so why don't we spend some time right now doing the Gearinghoff Head of the Class listener review. So got two of them today. Combine Ryan said, great podcast.
And is it Austin Boland 3? This was a great podcast, really gave good overview of Travis Burkhardt Foundation story. We did have a blast working for them.
That was a lot of fun putting that episode together and the whole experience. So yes, leave your reviews behind. We really appreciate that. And now, as promised, we're going to jump into a From the Field segment. I just realized, Dave, I lied. I told you that Farm for Profit shows have a What's Working in Ag segment and then a general topic. We're going to screw that and go with a From the Field segment. What do you think?
And even the Farm for Profit ones are fun if this is your first time listening. So back by popular demand, we have Brody Benton. And we're going to refer back to something we talked about in episode 44 we had you on. And we focused on your soil. And you talked all these big words, microbials and craziness. Thanks for coming back.
Yes, thanks for having me back.
So, Brody, why don't you reintroduce yourself in case somebody hasn't picked up episode 44 so they know where we're coming from.
Yeah, so episode 44, we had myself, Brody Benton. I'm a regional sales manager for BW Fusion. We also had Bodie Kitchell, not the same name as mine, which a lot of people confused, but that's okay. We just have the killer bees coming at you from BW Fusion. So I'm here, giving a From the Field segment, which we're not from the field today because it's a whole whopping 42 degrees on April 20th. So,
but you've been out in the field.
I've been out in the field a lot and moving a lot of stuff around.
Tell our listeners, other than our kids being in baseball together, what have you been in the field, the actual farm field doing? What have you been doing lately? What's your job entail?
From the baseball field, it's been really cold. Long underwear have come in handy this time of year right now. But in the field, what we've been doing, setting up a lot of different new innovative trials, what we've done. One thing is around over-treatment on corn, on treating the microbials, over-treating the current seed treatment that's there, plus then putting nutritionals in there, other growth stimulants, things that all we're trying to do is build that efficiencies, and back to the profit aspect of things. And then when we can build that efficiencies, no matter what sort of program that you have, we're going to be steps ahead going into the growing season.
So that's what you've been up to. What are your growers going through right now? What are some questions that our listeners might have in their head?
Yeah. So it's in the last 3 weeks, it seems like things have completely exploded even more on the 401 in furrow, because guys are going out with their planters. You know, how can I apply the microbes in furrow? And so there's been a lot of business around that. Now, is that the last opportunity? Absolutely not. I mean, we still have, especially for those guys that don't have in furrow units, you know, running BioCast or BioCast Plus with their post herbicide application. And the reason that we still have that huge opportunity is we've seen through the 365 program that we can increase phosphorus and other mineral nutrient uptake by 28 to 32%, even in that post-herbicide application.
Tanner, if you remember when we talked in episode 44, some of us were learning that what BW Fusion does different than our local agronomist is they get a whole lot more data points.
Yep.
And then those data points, they're looking at different things to bring, I believe we said, the fence row into the center of the field. And we did that with your product. So you talked about this BioCast. Help me understand more. What does it do? What does it do for my farm?
Yeah, so great question. I talked about two different products there. So BioCast is the 26 microbes that is in the 401 team. So those are the microbes that are really stimulating the plant, working symbiotically with the plant. The BioCast Plus product also has not only the BioCast or 401 microbes in it, it has the 29 microbes that's in Meltdown as well. So there's 53 total microbes in BioCast Plus that is not only stimulating the plant, but then also degrading whatever residue still out there, residue nutrients, and also carbon to be able to fuel that entire soil system.
That is definitely plus. I didn't realize that you added those two together. I figured it was just the 29 and the 26 was just three extra ones. So that I'm learning something new here. And our listeners know that there's three ways to have that 401 team applied. So it's kind of nice to know that even though we've been cold lately and we're delaying our planting, if we don't have that liquid system on our planter, we still have alternative ways to get this out in the field to help our farm out. What are guys saying to you about this cold weather? Obviously, by the time this podcast airs, we're hopeful that it's going to be warm and we're going to be rolling full speed. But what kind of questions have you been getting about the cold?
It's more on storability is kind of most of the questions is, okay, what do I need to do with the microbes? Do I need to bring them into my basement at night? Do I need to sleep with them to keep them warm? You know, stuff like that. No, just keep them in your shop and you'll be fine. And I mean, they are very hardy. I mean, they're used to going through ups and downs in the soil system and going dormant and coming out of dormancy. So that's nothing atypical for them. As far as, you know, when do I go plant? I'm looking at this next 10-day forecast, and I don't know if any of you believe in fog days, but I do. And we have fog days lined up for the end of April through the first week of May. And if you look at the Weather Channel, they're calling for about 5-6 days straight of rain starting the 28th of April. So I'm looking at, okay, I think Thursday the green flag drops here, which would be the 22nd of April. And we're going to have about 5 to 6 days of planting, and then we're going to get some wet weather on top of that.
This is really going to put him to the test, because this episode is going to come out, I think, that first week of May. So we should be in the middle of a wet spell.
Yep.
And we all know that if you're right, nobody's going to say anything. But if you're wrong, you're going to catch all kinds of flack for that.
So I'm going to put a plug in for, there's a 16, I think it's a 16-year-old guy on Facebook. It's called Midwest Weather. And that kid has been spot on. I started following him back last fall with weather events, rain events, snow events. And that kid, he's got three different models that he formulates his predictions on. And he's really close. A lot better than our local Weather Channel, I can tell you that.
And the apps on my phone, I definitely need to get into some type of a subscription. So when I called you the other day, Brody, you said you were out delivering some corn around that you had done an experimental treatment on. What can you expand a little bit? What are you guys doing looking into the future and how you could advance BW Fusion towards helping our listeners?
Yeah, so currently we have the 401C treatment. So that's just over-treating corn. You could over-treat that on corn, or you know, it could be act as like an inoculant on soybeans. But what the other things that we're doing with that is, okay, how high can we push those rates up? What are other things that we can put on there? So micronutrients, zinc, manganese, copper. What other root promoters can we put on there? What other stress relievers can we put on there? And actually, the seed that I had treated or that I was hauling, we'd put up to 16 ounces of product per unit, which that's almost 4x the amount of total product that anybody would ever treat on seed. So those are the sorts of things that we're doing to you know, back to improving the efficiencies. But then those side-by-sides are going to go through the 365 program. Did we increase early season micronutrient levels? Did that pull any other nutrients along with that as well? And so, you know, that's where, you know, we bring the two things together.
So now I know I have a listener that's thinking the same way I am, that you just put that much more seed treatment on that kernel. Are they going to have any issues getting that through their planter?
So that was our concern at first. But we've actually planted one of those boxes over by Boone with a dealer over there. And that was my first question is how did it plant? And his dad was actually the one running the planter. So if there was going to be a gripe, I mean, it was going to come in a hurry.
Yep.
And he's like, no, we had maybe a few extra kernels, but nothing that, you know, would set an alarm off on their precision units or 2020 monitor. So
good. And then the other conversation I had was with Corey, one of our co-hosts, and he's mentioned that you guys have got some stuff working on his farms. Because like we said, we're going to try and get into that 365 program displayed on our website right. So we can see what's going on in Corey's field. So what things have you been helping him get fixed, and what products are you using to do that?
Yeah, so both on corn and soybeans, one of those is the cornfield, one is the bean field. So we're going to run our 401 in furrow, the base 26 microbes, plus then HF12, which is humic fulvic acid, and then C-amino, which is seaweed kelp, plus then chitosan and other, I think there's some yucca extract and other things in there too to increase nutrient uptake. So those are the three things we're going to run as a base. But then he had some different pH issues on those two farms, and so we're going to run some different blocks of Pell Lime out there as well with my pull behind spreader here tomorrow. So
you got me wondering as a novice listener or somebody out there that might not be farming and tuning into our podcast. You just said acid. You said a bunch of other things that is going on our crops.
I heard him say yuck in there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So what I'm sure you get that question a lot, but there's a lot of different things that you're adding as seed treatment or to our plants. How does the general public take that? And what are your thoughts on safety?
Well, there's nothing really from a safety standpoint. It's not like it's
hydrochloric acid.
Hydrochloric acid. Yep. It's going to burn your skin. And,
okay,
you know,
fair enough.
That's good to know.
All I can think of is a scene in Indiana Jones. But anyway.
yep, I'm with you.
So humic acid is a long-chain carbon.
Okay.
So think of it this way. Think of you have a plate of food in front of you, and you have your steak, potatoes, and you have your dessert. So humic is that long chain carbon. It's like your steak. It's going to take longer to break down to become an energy source for you to consume.
Okay.
Same for the microbes. The fulvic is your potatoes, more of an intermediate food source. And then if you were to have any sort of sugar source in there, that would be the dessert. It'd be quick release and utilization right away. So that's why we put those three things together. So like the C-amino, you know, that acts as like a sugar source, plus then all the other goodies that come with that.
So what I'm gathering is all those goodies are food, Tanner, for our plants, and that is what makes them grow better. When we talk about why BW Fusion, why do you want bigger yields, why do you want better crops? Well, feed your crops and treat them right and healthy. We do that as a human. The more healthy we eat, the better our physique is, right? Well, right. Same deal.
Correct.
And yeah.
There's other dynamic things that come with humic as well, as far as the CECs to keep nutrients available and stuff like that. So it's a very dynamic thing to add into your soil system.
Sweet. Well, that was a very fast from the field segment, not from the field because of the temperature and weather conditions that we're sitting and experiencing here in Central Iowa. So Brody, help our listeners remind them how they can get a hold of you if they've got questions or want to explore any of the things we just talked about.
Yeah, so you can go on our website at BW Fusion, I guess bw-fusion.com, or you can reach out to me. My cell phone number is 515-650-0501. I'm happy to answer questions all the time.
So. All right, say that phone number one more time for us.
515-650-0501.
All right. Now, if you hit the back 15 seconds, you can hear his phone number for two more times, and you'll make sure you got it written down the right way. But thank you again, Brody, for joining us from BW Fusion. That was a From the Field segment, and we are ready to jump into our general topic for today.
Tanner, if we start talking our general topic today, this is one that I kind of brought to the table, and it stems from a book that I read called The Ideal Team Player. And I read this book right as I was taking a new job and had a difficult relationship with one of my coworkers, and it was recommended to me. And now I'm going to recommend it to our entire podcast listening base. Is Ideal Team Player.
And truthfully, when you first suggested this to me, Dave, you know, we're talking almost a year ago when you brought this up. I didn't know if there was going to be a direct relation to agriculture and to our listener base, but the more and more that I thought about it after I read it, I could see where this is happening. And I hope that this is timely for you, because there might be some people right now, listener, that you're dealing with, a vendor, a family member, an employee, somebody during the hype of this busy season that's got you a little bit frustrated.
And Tanner, this really stems, or the reason that I kind of suggested it is, it's working with other people, which we as farmers and we as podcast hosts have told all of our listeners they need to have a team. Yep. They need to have a support group that they're going to work with. Sometimes relationships clash, or sometimes you don't like the ideas they give you, but this is telling you how to be that ideal team player. And more than that, every podcast we ask our guests, we ask them the same question.
That's right.
And that question we ask them is, what are the most successful farmers doing? What do they all have in common? This book outlines what successful business people are doing to make good relationships.
So yeah, the nature of the book that Dave is talking about here, The Ideal Team Player, it's a leadership fable about the three essential virtues that a person or an employee should have. So if you're thinking about this now, I want you to think about the agronomists that you work with, the people on your advisory team, your family members, you yourself, and the way that you behave and conduct business as we put some of these into perspective. So let's take the setting of this book out of the corporate world, Dave, and try and relate it to farming. So we'll do our best to do that with you today. So when you think, Dave, in farming of team players, you already mentioned advisory team. What else pops in your mind thinking from the farmer front?
And so I'm thinking of the guy that might need the hired hand. Okay, so this goes to the hired hand, not necessarily just to the farmer.
Right.
Everybody's got different jobs they do, whether you're the guy that's shoveling crap, or you're the guy that's driving the combine, or, you know, hauling the grain to town. They all have different things that they're focused on, but how we communicate with the other people of how we want that job done. So from boss to employee, from employee to boss, how do we get that message across?
Right. And being a leader can help you train those employees if you see that they're lacking in some of these virtues. So we're gonna get into those, but everybody in your mind, you already know what your opinion of a team player is. So I'm curious if we're going to kind of align these with you. So according to Lenacci, I'm going to say Lenacci. That's a way, Lansani?
I just say Patrick. It's Patrick, okay. I think, and it's...
According to Patrick, the team player has three characteristics. He states that when a team member lacks one or more of these virtues, there is a problem, that it becomes really hard to build that team and keep a cohesiveness going together. So sometimes it's impossible if you don't have all three of these.
And not share the whole book with you in case you want to read it, but this guy's a contractor who inherits a family business, and he's trying to put millions and millions of dollars worth of stuff together, and he realizes he just took the management role of this entire team. And now what do we do with it? Maybe we could relate this to a farmer. If somebody passed away and all of a sudden the son has to run the entire farm, but dad's been doing it for years, right, or grandpa has, that's the exact same thing that happened in this book. And then as he looks at all of his players on his team, he says, oh boy, this guy works, this guy doesn't, this guy does, this guy does. And so he wrote this book of three different virtues.
Yes. So we'll start with the first virtue. The first virtue is humble. So they're saying this is by far the most obvious and easy to understand. Humility in a team member shows up when there is a lack of excessive ego or concerns about their own personal status. So we all know what being humble means. Think about the people that you work with. Is there anybody that sticks out right now that is the opposite of that?
My competition? No. Yes.
But if you do, the person that did pop in your mind, you're not a fan of them.
Probably not.
Right. You don't really like that person. I'm imagining right now that seed salesman or that really pushy agronomist, the sales agronomist that is coming to tell you that what you're doing is wrong and what they have to offer you is right. And instead of of being humble and stating that they have knowledge to share with you, they're forcing that upon you and being more arrogant than anything else.
So it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I have had guys, well, that's not the way that your predecessor did it, or that's right. not the way that it should be done, or who's planted this field, because it looks like crap.
Yep.
Oh, I did. Why? You think you can do it better? You know, so how you say it is everything. And that's what I kind of relate to the whole humble portion of this.
I agree. And I think everybody has those people in their mind right now that they consider to be humble, that you know of that person that will always put someone else's needs before theirs. And that's one of those characteristics that I think every person admires of those people.
Yeah, we don't want to be self-serving here in this portion. So this is you know, when we're at the co-op, Tanner, and the older gentleman says, how can I help? Or, hey, did you get that done? Or, you know, and now we have a little bit of age demographic too. So some of the older demographic thinks that all the young guys are just cocky and they're not humble at all. And realize, if you're that older demographic, that there was a used to say jump, and nobody would question. It was just how high,
right?
You know, U.S. Marine Corps style, versus the younger generation. I think they do want to go to work for you. They just, it's just different. They ask why, and they're not being cocky or argumentative. They want to know why so they can learn it. And then, so don't take that the wrong way, listeners.
Right. And if they're looking to achieve credit or get noticed, they're trying to build their own portfolio, trying to build your own resume. You've got an entire career. If you're talking generation differences, the older generation has an entire career to reflect back on and say, this is what I've done. That young farmer is still trying to build up that reputation. So another way to see a humble person is someone who's quick to share credit with others, praises others, you know, thanks them, very, very publicly and openly shares the credit for the success of the farm.
And Tanner, I'm going to tattle on myself a little bit. So I'm going to give you my real life example of this. And that is, I went and took, I'm an auctioneer, and I went and took an advanced bid calling class. This is the advanced. This is the best of the best, right?
Yep.
And I go into this class and I say, and I think I'm pretty good to start with, but I don't know who's going to be there. I do know who's teaching, and they're the best in the world. And so I get there and I'm listening to all the other auctioneers go, and I'm thinking, well, in my head, of course, I'm not saying this out loud. I wouldn't say I think I'm better than that person or I, you know, whatnot, right. But I'm thinking, geez, I might be the top of this class.
Right.
And I was thinking that, but then it was my turn to go and I got asked to go up and auction, and I get up there and I auction. And I'm thinking, well, give it the best. We're at the Advanced Academy here. Let's rock and roll. And so I did. And I just
right.
You know, hand it. And the gal says, you came here to improve, right? And I said, yeah. And so I'm waiting for it, you know, thinking that I'm pretty good. And I said, yeah, I am. She says, so you're ready to, you know, fix everything you need to fix, right? Yeah. She says, there's no problem with your bid calling, but you're the cockiest son of a buck I've ever met.
Yeah.
And I was floored. And I went, you got to be kidding me. Because I didn't think that I came off cocky. Anybody who's good is going to, you know, give it their best. But I really didn't think that was what I came and paid another $2,000 for somebody to tell me that I'm the cockiest son of a buck they've ever met.
Right. But it clearly, that comment, though, helped. Because it drove home a message that you're telling this story now, because it helped you to reflect.
So the point of telling that story is, we have to be accepting of that,
right,
and know that we might be perceived as someone else. Perception is reality. And I thought, well, I'm willing to help everybody. And I did not think I came off that way at all. Hopefully I never come off that way to anybody. I don't want that. However, this gal said I did that day. And so for whatever reason, it made me really take a look to the words that I use, to the actions that I do.
Body language,
anything, to where now maybe I talk a lot. Maybe rather than talking, let someone else talk, and then let their idea be better than mine. Let somebody else. So even if you're listening, you're thinking, well, yeah, sure, I'm humble. Well, I thought that at one time too.
Sure.
So I'm going to give the challenge right now. And that is that even if you think you're humble, take another look.
I really like what you said, that perception is reality. And I think with a lot of what we're talking about during this episode, you have to think about how others perceive you. we're not asking you to go change yourself because of what someone thinks of you, but just be conscious of your perception. So that way you can attack these situations. I mean, one of the characteristics in the book, or the characteristic in the book, defined that humble team players are self-confident. So there's nothing wrong with being self-confident, but they're not arrogant. So that, just like you said, you be careful to what people perceive you as. Humility isn't thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less, is a quote that came right out of the book. So really kind of neat. And the fun part about this book is they also give you a little bit of a heads up to what to look out for and to caution yourself. So what they talked about for this characteristic is people who are insecure and discount their own talents sometimes appear to be humble. But you have to be aware that that's not what humble is. People who have a sense of self-worth that is deflated often end up hurting the team by being too passive and not telling you about an opportunity or not having enough confidence in what you and your farm can take over. So be careful. You got to understand. You got to get that perception correctly of what being humble actually is.
And so when I relate that back to farmers, I'm thinking of that hired hand and realize that, why the heck don't I get a combine? You know, why am I not the guy that does it? Realize the boss might have something else in mind.
Yep.
And he might think that you're really, really good at driving the truck, and you're the only one with a CDL. So just don't have the perception, or don't think or ask questions. Hey, why am I the guy driving the truck instead of the combine? I have more experience than XYZ operator. So that's what being humble is. That, just like said in the book, humility isn't thinking less of yourself. You can still be good at what you do, but think of yourself less.
And as a leader of those employees, actually listening to what they're saying to you and the questions that they have may help you find a spot or a hole in your leadership ability that you weren't aware of. So let's move on to the second virtue, and that is hungry. When I first read this, hungry didn't fit. I didn't think of hungry as being a virtue. But the way they defined it is hungry people are always looking for more.
And that has been one of our number one answers when it comes to what are the most successful farmers doing. I think it's probably been repeated more than any other one, and that is they're always striving to be better. What's new? What can I learn? What can I get on TikTok and meet up with all these other guys and figure out a different method? What are carbon credits doing, et cetera, et cetera? They're always moving forward and looking to the future.
Right. What can I change in my operation? Not because I'm doing it wrong, but that I can do better. And I would argue, Dave, that every one of you listening to this right now, you right now listening to this podcast, are hungry. Because our podcasting style, sure, it's fun and it's business, but I know that you're here for this episode today because you're hungry to try and pick something out of this message, and that's why you continue to come back each week. So first of all, congratulations, listener, for doing that and being part of this. You might already have one of these virtues already covered.
And for the ideal team player, you need to have all three. Doesn't mean that if you don't have one that you can't be the ideal team player. Just know what to work on, as I have tried to do myself, and hence the reason for reading the book. So when I think of hungry, and I'm thinking of hiring somebody, I just got to do this last week. I could hire someone, and there were some that just wanted to do the status quo. Well, what time do I have to show up?
Yeah. Okay. What time do I have to be there?
What time do I have to be there? What is that? And there was other people that asked the question, well, what's the future of the company look like? Mm-hmm. Big difference in just the question that they asked. I can tell that one person that's saying, what's the future look like? And what's the longevity, versus the other person is just asking a question, well, what time do I have to be there?
Right. How long do I have to be here?
So if you're that senior manager farmer that is looking to hire some people, maybe you're looking for that young guy that says, I'd like to take over a farm someday, but I got a lot to learn. And if you're that young guy, you might want to have that attitude, because that older gentleman might not have any heirs, and all of a sudden you just inherited a big old farm operation.
Right.
And we know that that's happened, Tanner.
Yep.
So if you're hungry, stay hungry and keep trying to be better.
Yeah. So they define it as intrinsically motivated, diligent, and have a strong desire to do more by going above and beyond. And I agree. That would be something that you pick up on, is that hired hand that shows up early before chores to check the cows, or the one that is always in line at the elevator to dump before they open. You can see that very obviously in a person's characteristic. I keep thinking of this as business owners, and in the farming world, it's rare to find that employee that goes above and beyond for the farm owner. You know, I think about this a lot. You know, I'm one of those. I would like to say that this is a characteristic that I have, is I go above and beyond for the bank. But I actually think that I'm going above and beyond for my customer. The bank doesn't matter. It does. Pays my paycheck. If you're listening, Bank, Vision Bank, thanks. But ultimately, I'm going above and beyond for my customer because I want to make sure that their business is not interrupted because of something that I did. So if I got to come in early or stay late, that's the way that I view going about this.
And Tanner, I guess I put myself in the same boat that you are, maybe for a different thought process, though. I don't ever want anybody to think of me as the guy that didn't give 120%.
Yeah.
So when I think of going above and beyond, it's for personal perception. I don't know if that's humble enough, but for personal perception, I don't want people to think of me as the guy that went half speed. I want to be 110%. So they're like, that guy never slows down. He is always looking forward. He's on to the next deal already. Like, holy smokes. And so nobody can ever complain that he didn't get his job done. No, right. He was here before, long before. And that was just a personal attribute that I wanted to exacerbate to any potential employers or anybody that knew me that I wasn't the quitter.
So if you, listener, are thinking about your advisory team and the people that you work with, think about those salesmen. Are they answering your phone calls on the weekend? Are they the ones that are always coming, seed deliveries, getting seed delivered on time, making sure that the chemical totes are ready? Maybe you're going to run short on fuel. Just the people that you're working with, if you have somebody that is constantly letting you down, maybe we need to find a new somebody that isn't going to, that is going to be more hungry to service your business and ultimately help your farm be more profitable, because we don't want downtime.
And this can go with our whole advisory team. So the people that are good on your advisory team, I know we've talked about it a million times. Think about this. So when PPP loan came out,
right?
The Paycheck Protection Program, I was pretty busy. Now, I had a banker reach out to me and say, hey, Dave, have you thought of doing this? I had an accountant reach out to me and said, Dave, this would fit your bill. You probably should do this. Are you going to let go of any employees? Those are the people that are going above and beyond because they're looking out for your future. And I don't know that they made anything off of it. They didn't necessarily get anything off the accounting side of it at all. It was just looking out for that person. So if you're the seed rep listening, maybe it's, hey, did you hear about this new hybrid? Hey, did you guys hear about this new Gearinghoff head? I think it could be beneficial, and you might be able to do carbon credits because of the road.
I was just thinking, hey, have you heard about the Farm for Profit podcast?
Yeah.
That's a really easy above and beyond. Just hit share.
Send That's all you got to do.
Oh, that was a shameless plug.
That worked awful. Out perfect.
So in the book then, with this hungry characteristic, what they tell you to be aware of and look for is people that are hungry but in a selfish way. So you got to be careful that just because they are going above and beyond for you, is there an ulterior motive? So it's extremely detrimental to a team's health if they're doing it this way. Hunger driven by selfishness causes an individual's goals to get in the way of the team's goals. So are they just pushing a product because they get paid commission, or are they pushing a product because they know it's going to be better for your farm?
And, when I originally read this book, I was thinking about the other person that I was frustrated with at work. And I thought, she needs to read this book. Like, she needs to read it. And then I read it again and said, maybe I need to read it. Am I that person? So I hit that home. I didn't want to be selfish that I wasn't trying to advance my career. And before I took this new job, a previous boss of mine told me, whatever decisions you make as a leader, as a manager, make sure you make those decisions based on your employees and you'll never be wrong. And so I thought, well, that's every decision I've made so far is based on the employees that I'm trying to represent or the group that I'm trying to lead. And so I think that was one of the best quotes ever given to me was make sure any decision you make, make it in the best interest of the people you lead.
Yeah. Whether it's a customer base or an employee base, I totally, totally follow in line with that, dude. That was great to add.
So now the third virtue is smart. So what are we talking about by smart, Tanner? We're talking to emotional intelligence. So this was the one that really bit me. And this was the one that was, Jen Hartman talked about this. Some people just get it.
Yes.
And so I'm going to call it business politics. That's what I'm going to call it. Sometimes know when to bite your lip and bide your time, even though you want to floor that guy and you sure could. Is it beneficial to the group? So even though you know that hired hand just left the valve open on something and it ruined the entire day for everybody, and we know, everybody knows it's their fault, it doesn't help to chew their backside.
I had an instance to where this became obvious in my career early on, was sitting in a loan committee in which I had made some observations of this customer's balance sheet and their spending habits. And I made a comment that I had noticed this. It had no bearings on whether that loan should be approved or not. But I made myself look like a jerk in front of the entire loan committee because someone else was presenting a new loan. Their customer, I made an observation that just made myself look like an idiot because I was trying to point out something that they maybe didn't notice. There's absolutely no reason that every person in this world can't be smart and figure things out. You just have to be attuned to the environment that's around you. A conversation sometimes can be held in private rather than in public to get that message across and allow you to come across more intelligent, or at least, again, to help with that perspective, Dave.
You know, and they say smart people exercise great judgment and intuition around subordinates or in a group of, a group of people that they're leading, and the group dynamics make them fully aware of the effect of their words because, you know, there was just a big thing politically. Your words matter. I just call it, know when to bite your lip and bide your time.
Yep. And I'm reflecting back on my in-law's farm. So my in-laws have a grumpy Dan and a happy Dan. And it's very clear which one of those Dans the employees enjoy working with. You don't want to get assigned a job with grumpy Dan, or at least if you're going to, you know that you're going to be put in a position to where you don't like what he said, he was too rash, whatever it is. I get it. That could be a generational difference back to your jumping how high. But that still is the point of these three virtues, is if you don't want to be that person that people avoid, this is one of the characteristics to possess.
And in the book, I, as a new leader, I've been trying to read this. And what I've been trying to read into is actually, do you fire that person? Do you let that person go? If you know they're going to bring down the dynamics of the group, then do you let him go? Do you say, I don't think you match with our vision of the direction we want to go? Furthermore, in the back of my head, I know there's going to be a lot more happy people, and I think they're going to produce better because Grumpy Dan is gone. So I've struggled with that. Do you let that person go? They may be a good producer, maybe a good hired hand, but if they're bringing down the whole dynamic, what's your thoughts?
I think that you as the leader first are responsible for trying to help them grow in this virtue. To see if there's something that you can do, a conversation that can be had, a training, a set of meetings that can help them become more smart and aware of their surroundings and the things that they say. Because if you can educate them on different ways to say the same thing and they get their message across, they're not getting stifled. You're not shutting them up. You're still going to have and make sure that their opinions are heard, but maybe we can deliver that message in a different way. I mean, think about this. Think about landlords. Every one of their listeners has a landlord that they absolutely hate talking cash rent with because that landlord doesn't care. Absolutely zero care. There's no smartness in their conversation. They don't have all of these virtues because they're out for the sheer dollar. But we all have those landlords that we enjoy. The ones that we actually swing by their house and have lunch with. The ones that we take and maybe write that extra check at the end of the year for because we really care about them. Just think about how smart they've been in their conversations with you in the past to get that reputation built up with you.
And I'm going to go back to perception. I'm going to give another story. I was at Tanner, you know, I'm an auctioneer. I'll say that again. I'm gunning for the world champion auctioneer someday. Well, I have been focusing a lot of my career towards wanting to do that. And as I did, I was in a class with a gal once, about 65-year-old gal named Gina, and Gina was great, and it was a 3-year class. But Gina wasn't somebody that could get me to where I thought I needed to go. And so I don't know that I ever had a conversation with Gina. I mean, a couple times I had a conversation with the other people that I thought might be influential. And then, sure enough, Gina and I were leaving the last year of the class we were in. And I said, hey, you want to get a taxi together? She says, sure. And it was Uber at that time. We Ubered and we started talking. And she said in that car, she said, you know, this is the first time you've talked to me in 3 years.
So she noticed.
She says, why in the world couldn't you be more humble to start with? And I didn't even know Gina was thinking that. I thought I was. I thought I talked with everybody in the whole classroom. Didn't realize that I left her out in that point. And she said, man, we could have had 3 awesome years. She says, I'm glad we're talking now. And she's great. We talk all the time. Now we're email buddies and we talk back and forth. She's a business owner in Florida. But her perception that I did not even pick up on was the fact that because I was talking with other people. So maybe this relates to farmers. This story could be in relation that you might be that huge operator and that young guy is just one man. He thinks you're an idol and he might want to talk with you. don't be so
quick to dismiss.
And that is where, you know, even if they're Grumpy Dan or Happy Dan or whatever, and not to tattle on myself, but this book was really good in that aspect, just to make me aware, self-aware of all the surroundings of stuff that I didn't even know that people were thinking. I was just going. I wasn't thinking. So as farmers, we go. When it's going season...
Right, exactly. And this podcast has put a lot of things into perspective for me personally, and I'm hoping it has for you and for Corey when he shows up later, that we have interesting stories and interesting conversations with every one of our listeners. It doesn't matter the size of your farm, where you farm, how long you've been farming. It doesn't matter what you sell. You know, we got to talk to Mr. Dickhoot of Gearinghoff.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fun conversation. After what you heard and on the recording, to get to know Bill, to get to know the people that have been guests on this podcast, you don't have to have a million followers on Twitter or TikTok to be someone that has a good story. So just be humble and smart about the way you have a conversation. You may find somebody in that room of that church social that you've never spoken to that you could really benefit from.
And in the book, it also talks about smartness. So what is smartness? Smartness is the person that is really good at being smart, but they're doing it for the wrong reason. So that's
true. Yeah.
That's the person that can read the language, read the body language. They know if they rub the right shoulders of the right boss that they're going to move up, et cetera, et cetera. Not everybody's in it for the good intentions. So make sure they have all three.
Yep.
Are they humble? Are they hungry? Are they smart? All at the same time.
Yeah, because that smartness is where I see that playing a lot in agriculture. And that's that farmer that goes after your landlord. That's the first thing that popped my mind. And I know that's the first thing that popped in our listeners' mind is they went to church. You mentioned, you name-dropped one of your landlords that you enjoy working with, and all of a sudden they got a phone call from the guy that you just trusted with that information. So I agree, Dave. Very good point. You need to make sure that you have all three. So the other thing, as you get towards the end of the book, is they start to tell you how to recognize people that don't have all three. So the first one is the accidental mess maker. So you know that team member who is wicked smart, motivated, always bubbling with great ideas, but often rubs people the wrong way. And that's who we just kind of talked about was that farmer who always attacks people's landlords to try and bid up that cash rent. They are humble and hungry, but they're not smart.
And the second person to watch out for is the skillful politician. They're everyone's friend.
Yep.
They're confident. They know perfect thing to say at the right time. They're motivated, eager, ambitious, but only when there's the element of personal benefit to them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's that person who will volunteer for something if they know it's going to benefit their company, benefit their farm, benefit their family or their child. It's good that they volunteered to put that together, but that is truly someone who is hungry and smart, but not humble because they're always thinking about themselves. That's the skillful politician.
And that's when people say in farming, I think, that it's become business. And it has. It has become business, and you need to be skillful, and you need to be a politician. But there is a humbleness that needs to be taken into consideration to not just, oh, I see an opportunity, let's pounce.
So the next one they tell about is the lovable slacker. So he cares about absolutely everybody. He's charming, always positive, technically capable, dependable, and a solid member of your team. However, he's only going to do what you ask him to. And I know I can already think of a couple of employees that unless you give them a task, unless it's on the whiteboard, unless it's in their phone, that's all they're going to do. And once they're done with it, they're going to come back to the shop and they're going to sit until you tell them to do something different.
This is what I think of when I think of corporate America. They're humble. They're smart. They know when to bite their lip and bide their time, but they're not hungry. They get paid their check. They're waiting for Friday.
Yep, that's exactly what the lovable slacker is. And the last example that they gave us is the bulldozer. And I don't even think we have to talk about it. You guys get it. When you think of a bulldozer, you think of a powerhouse, somebody that isn't going to stop for anything. We are going to get this job done. We're going to hit that deadline no matter what the cost is. And you can immediately already tell that this person's hungry, but they aren't humble and they aren't smart.
Nope.
Because they will run over whatever it takes to get to that finish line.
Yeah. And we all know people like that. We all know the bulldozer that it's my way or the highway, and there's the right way, the wrong way, and my way.
So yada, 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 right? So if you're still listening to this, I applaud you because you understand that this is applicable to farming. This is applicable to ag sales, ag business. Everybody listens to this podcast. So thank you for sticking around. But think about that. Think about yourself. Think about the people that you network with, the employees that you're going to hire. Maybe you don't have all these characteristics. Or maybe like Dave and I gave examples that we're still growing in some of these categories of these characteristics. But think about what you could improve upon.
I love the book. It was recommended to me because I told a guy that I was struggling with an employee, and I'm glad he recommended it. If you have time to, and I do the audiobook, so if you're planting or harvesting or whatever you're doing and listen to the podcast, go to Audible, grab that book, or go to Amazon Downloads, any of them, and grab that book and just take a listen. It's a pretty short read, but...
Yeah, just think about how many win-win situations you can put yourself in if the perception that you have is that you possess all three of these virtues. So think about that. In agriculture, trust is everything. And definitely one of the baselines of trust, I think, are these three virtues. So Dave, do you want to try and summarize this up, or do you want to do the challenge today?
Sure, I'll summarize it up. So again, we started with a recommendation from myself, the ideal team player. And the author of that book is Patrick, and we think it's, how did you say it?
Lenacci.
Patrick Lenacci. That's what we'll go with. And he is a gentleman that took over a construction company and had to instantly become a leader and a manager. And when he did, he tried to figure out what was wrong with his company and why they weren't getting stuff done. What they figured out is that the best team players that they had were three things: humble, hungry, and smart. Humble, by far the most and easiest to understand. They were just being a humble person that worked well with others. Hungry, the people that were looking to always advance, always be on top of their game, always looking for more. They didn't just settle for whatever they got. And smart, of course, smart in the instance of being intellectually smart and knowing when to bite your lip and bide your time, knowing how to work well with others, and knowing when to challenge the process and when not to. And then they talk about all the different things that could be something not to look for, Tanner. And that's that accidental mess maker, the skillful politician, the lovable slacker, and the bulldozer. And we in farming have one of those everywhere. I know we do, of each kind. So that's kind of what we covered today. And I'm guessing you're going to give them a challenge that goes right along with all of those virtues.
Absolutely. And we don't have anybody to hear to ask today about what we think the most successful farmers all have in common. But that's the reason we did this episode, is we think that they all have these virtues. So I challenge you to think about these characteristics. And if you are lacking on one, be honest with yourself and just work on it. Just start building that. The same thing with the employees that you have around you or family members. If there's something that you can help somebody be better at, because maybe you are extremely hungry and you can help share some of that motivation. Maybe you are smart and you know the tactfulness that it takes to get through conversations. You can help bring people up. And obviously, as the team gets stronger, your farm's going to get better. So that's my challenge, is think about yourself and then think about others to see if you can't help build that support around you. And remember, just like Dave did, he suggested this topic. Send ideas to us, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. Remember to like, rate, review, and share this podcast with all your friends. And venture on over to YouTube, hit subscribe. We'd love to have you join the network over there. And until next time, we hope you have a good one.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.